You're listening to Awake, a men's podcast by Fellowship Bible Church.
Welcome back to the Awake podcast. My name is Ben Hooper, filling in for Liam and Sean. Today's guest we have is Rick Wirtz. Rick, you've been at Fellowship for a long time, and just like to hear your story about your mission field, both here locally and internationally. So, what was it like growing up?
So I grew up in a home that was a great home. They well provided for. Never go to church. So at 17, I was invited to a rally with some other friends that we had in Orlando, Florida. And so it was pretty much they gave the story about where you're going to spend eternity and made it real. And so I chose to follow Christ that night. But as a lot of times it happened in those situations, there was no follow-up with me. But I really believe that at that point, my conversion was real.
And did you happen to grow up in Topeka, or?
I was a military brat, so grew up everywhere. So it was a lot of fun, you know, growing up in barefoot and the beach and the jungles and different things. And so we just had a great, great childhood.
And then how'd you end up in Topeka?
So I came to Topeka. My dad retired from the military. At the same time, I kind of wanted to go to college at KU. And he bought a farm. He still had a year left in the military. So went to the farm to be the man of the house so much. But I left a school of 4,800 for sophomore, junior, and seniors and went to a graduating class of 31. So it was quite a different culture shock. Wasn't particularly happy to be there.
And you have something here today that the podcast listeners can't see, but if you follow on the video, what do you have in front of us?
So in front of us, I have the backbone of a saltwater catfish. And honestly, this was the hook that I got hooked on by Christ. I was always attracted to this bone, even when I wasn't a Christian. When you dry it out, it looks like the crucifix of Christ on one side, and on the other side, it looks like a Roman shield. And if you shake it, it sounds like dice they cast for Jesus' robe. So had knowing that story, I thought the only proper thing to do is when I saw a cute young lady that I wanted to spend more time with, I gave her one of these. And she looked at it and looked at it and looked at me, and I thought, oh boy, what's going to happen here? And she says, I don't think anybody's given me a more precious gift. Do you want to go to church on Sunday? And that was the moment where I didn't care where I went with her. Church was fine, you know. And so I went to church with her. She's still a fantastic, it's not my wife, but she's still a fantastic lady, follows the Lord with all her heart. And but a pastor there poured into me and discipled me and took me in under his wings. And that's where I really had my, you know, sometimes I believe at the first part of our conversions is when we absolutely grow our most.
And years later, you met your wife, Paula.
Yeah, a few years later.
Yeah, tell us about that.
So actually, Paul and I met at a discotheque. So yeah, she, I kiddingly say that she was dancing on top of the table, and I said, I'm going to marry that girl. But anyone that knows her knows she has big blue eyes and is just mesmerized. And we grew together and dated for a while. She broke up with me. Or no, actually, it was me that broke up with her. And 2 years later, we got back together and, you know, as they say, the rest is history.
That's fun. And so years later, as you got married and then you started a business.
Yeah, Masonry Concepts is my business. And I really believe that there's no point in time that we're not supposed to glorify and draw others to Christ. And in my business is not an exception. So we try to do things that can help other people out, but also, you know, can be a witness to them and mostly my employees, but also to the people that we come in contact with and make those relationships.
So your Masonry Concept, you go out to the community. So it's not only a sales job for you, but it's also your mission field here locally.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I can tell you one quick story that correlates to that even today, but I'm in the middle of cancer right now. And so I wasn't even supposed to even have a scan of my neck until the 28th of this month, but I happened to know a guy that needed an outdoor living area, he and his wife, and I showed up, and they didn't have, they had plans, but when I showed up, she had visibly cancer. She's wearing a scarf and without any hair. And I said, well, let's look at your project after we pray. And so that made an impression. You fast forward to today, and he happened to be the oncologist that was doing my biopsy and scan. And so he always remembered me. So God places everyone in our path, you know, for us to be a witness to and to help build up.
Wow. And not only that you have a masonry contract business, and then you seek the Lord in it and the relationships you build with that. Tell us about like the missions that are going on here in Topeka that you're a part of.
So missions here in Topeka, they vary widely. We're very passionate about Topeka North Outreach and Lifeline Children's Services. So in that, Topeka North Outreach is some of the things that we do is just provide financial support, but we also do backpack where some of the food items that we pack into the kids' bags and stuff like that may be the only meals that they get in a day. At Lifeline Children's Services, interesting enough, I was brought into that through different circumstances. So many of you may have heard Herbie Newell. He's the director of Lifeline Children's Services. He actually called me a day before I was heading to India. And my wife and I had been praying for a chance to come alongside with a partner that would be doing that. So as only God would do, Angela Beamer, who is the children's director at Northland Christian Church, was working for Lifeline at the time in Lisa Kelly's basement. So I didn't even know anything about Lifeline. But this guy calls me because Angela said, if you need to talk to anybody about India, I got a guy. So Herbie's trying to convince me to miss by a day a missions trip to India, and because he was coming to Topeka. And I'm like, what kind of crazy man is this that doesn't understand that, you know, it's very hard to keep a missions trip together in a time frame?
And that's how you got started with Lifeline Ministries and your signature unadopted shirt. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so I did go ahead and go on that trip and didn't meet Herbie at that time, but he kept in contact with me, and I kept in contact with my wife, and it was pretty much everything we'd been praying for, the relationship of how somebody could come alongside us and I either be their onesiphorus or they be mine to hold my hands up, you know, the Aaron that, you know, with in the Bible, those type of things. And so I got back from the 17-day missions trip, and I told Paula, I says, you're going to be mad at me, but I'm going to be going to Birmingham, Alabama, and I'm going to stay a week. And she says, why would I be mad at you? Because this is exactly what we've been praying for.
Wow. And through that work with Herbie Newell and the work that you were doing in India, how did that open the doors for continued work in building things with your masonry background in India?
So that very first trip happened way before I met Herbie, but I was full of myself, as sometimes we often do. I'd like to tell you that I'm over that, but I'm not. I went to India on a pretty much a dare that, you know, we're going to build a training center for Youth for Christ. And I went full of myself, trying to show everybody how strong I was, how much I could, you know, take care of building a building very quickly. But at the beginning of that trip, got off a plane at midnight, hadn't slept for 38 hours, total pitch blackness when we walked outside, and just a horrible, horrible smell. And they were actually burning bodies because of disease. And the only light you could see, it was attracted to the light like any other time, but the only light you could see was lights in a garbage dump. And kids were eating garbage in that garbage dump. And at that moment, that was when God got me to full surrender, was thinking about why I was there. Even things that I thought that I was going to purchase in India. And I have an eagle carved out of marble in my basement. It sits in the middle of my coffee table. But for 17 days in India, I had no idea where that was in my house. I paid a tremendous amount of money for it because I had the capacity and the ability to buy it. And Now it sits there as a reminder to me, along with a set of praying hands that a leper woman who begs for a living gave me to remember her. It's very humbling at that point, but I mean, I'm so thankful that God brought me to a point where only He could do.
And through that work and servitude, going overseas and there in India, can you tell us more about the Chennai ministry, about the Steps Home that you're involved with in the ministry at Lifeline?
So Isaac and Tara Monogram have Steps Home in India. Isaac just recently passed away due to COVID complications in India, but Tara continues the fight. And they were working for Freedom Ministries at the time. And Isaac and I kind of hit it off. It was on that trip that I first held Satara. They had adopted their first child, and she was just a little tiny baby, about seven months old. And it was once again resonating with me, because one of the things in my life that's part of my story is that, you know, God says He intricately wove us all together in the mother's womb, and He is our, you know, Savior from the moment that we begin birth. My mom tried to abort me when, you know, she didn't make it into the clinic, but she was rescued by some lady that prayed for her on the doorstep, you know. So it all became part of my story. Like 6 years later, they adopted three more little girls, Karunya, Nisha, and Sarah, and I held all three of those in my arms while I was in India, and it grew. We've had many, I think up to 64 girls have gone through the Steps Home. There's currently 17, but now they're of college age, and it all started with me holding first their firstborn adopted daughter and then several others.
And you're sharing a story about how the girls that graduate come back. Can you share a little bit about that?
Okay, so we're leaping forward to a different ministry at this point, but the girls are graduating from Steps. We have one in artificial intelligence ministry. We have one studying for dental school. We're hoping soon to have some of those girls, with the cooperation of some doctors here in Topeka, come to be nursing students at Washburn University. But jumping forward to another ministry that I'm engaged in India is called Emerging Young Leaders International.
In which you happen to be the president of.
Don't like the title, but yes, I am. So, and even this week, Aaron Balanchander, who is the director in India, is coming to Topeka and is going to spend some time here with us at Fellowship and, you know, engaging more people into what he is doing. But those young ladies that you're referring to is like, we do training and after school respite, things like that for girls. And there's twofold to this story. I know I'm getting pretty convoluted here, but there's two folds to this story. You have Hannah Krupa Ministries, which is also another ministry of Lifeline Children's Services, located in Bangalore, India. Our headquarters for EYL is also in Bangalore, India. So what happens in India is that kids go to school, a government school, till the fourth grade, but then a lot of them are then sent to work by their families. So Hannah and Krupa, they pour into these kids, and they have a bunch of volunteers, and they're working right in the slums and with the least of these, the very vulnerable children. And we also work in the slums at EYL, but we were trying to pick them up at that fourth grade and educate them and make them be the best maid or servant or whatever they can be. But if they have the capacity and the skills to learn more, we have a group of young ladies that pour into them, and they're their mentors and they're the disciplers. But I recently took Sonia Martin in 2021 on a trip with me, and she saw that, and she says, do you think it's really real to give them that hope that they could become doctors and lawyers and engineers? And I said, do you remember that they were all sitting on the ground and they each stood up one by one to tell you what they wanted to be and why they were there? And I said, do you also remember that there was another group of ladies standing along the wall? I said, all of those ladies came through the program. They are all now doctors, lawyers, and engineers, and they are all pouring back into them by, you know, giving them hope in the gospel.
Wow. That's amazing. And to see what the Lord is doing and bringing back those that went through the program and understood that they were faithful in what the Lord had for them and had given opportunity to come back and do the same to the where they were before. And you're also involved in other ministries not so local to Kansas, but also just in the States. Can you tell us more about Hawaii and how you're vacationing there? Because I know we go there to vacation. We don't often think Hawaii in missions.
So 13 years ago, the tsunami hit. Japan was also going to hit Hawaii, and we had traveled there for our 30th wedding anniversary, and I really would have rather went back to Guam, but my wife wanted to go to Hawaii, so that's where we went. And on a Wednesday, we went out and we saw all the parts that aren't in the brochures that aren't all on the beachfronts and everything. And I was explaining to, we went with another couple, and I was explaining to my wife and them that it was much like a third world country in the inner parts of Hawaii, and then processing that all day, what it was like, that why it was like that. And it's like high cost of living, you know, service-related jobs, maids, cooks, dishwashers, you know, gardeners, things like that. So it was like not the mass that I see in third world countries, but it was still the same type of poverty. And so as only God would have it, that night the tsunami hits Japan and we're in Kauai, and it's supposed to hit Kauai next at 500 miles an hour, 12 feet high. I'm like, I'm doing math. I'm watching KU football, so I'm still full of myself, right? It's just like I'm doing math, and I'm thinking, let's see, we're 20 foot off the ocean, 12 feet high, 500. We might get splashed because we're on the fourth floor of a, you know, all concrete building. And I'm like, but we're another 90 feet up the hill, and we got captain's chairs in the van, so another 90 feet, we'll surely be safe. So finally, I wake everybody up, and we go to a church that we'd already planned to go to on Sunday for church. We go to a church for shelter, and it was like end times. People were hugging each other, crying, you know, telling their families goodbye. They all thought they were going to die. And I was helping a gentleman beside me unload all these beachfront supplies. He ended up being the lead pastor of that church, but he says, you're pretty gung-ho. And I said, I'm not afraid to die, but we will, however, be here a long time if it hits anything like what they said, because that airport's at sea level. So he asked me what I did for a living. I said, I'm a masonry contractor. He set his box down. He grabbed my face, and he says, we have been praying for a masonry contractor. And in all my spirituality, I told him to get out of town. But the conversation went deeper, and as it turned out, they were trying to reach not only were the people in poverty on that island, but 90% of them are not Christian. And his idea that God placed in his heart was to reach those kids through, you know, activities and things like that to draw them into the gospel. And what he wanted to build was a gymnasium, but the requirements were to have two FEMA shelters on both ends, which by living in Kansas, we built a lot of FEMA shelters for tornadoes. There it was for hurricanes. So we went through that process about how he couldn't afford me. I was from Kansas, and then I was humbled again, and I just had helped build a building in India 4 days before we left for Hawaii. And I said, you know what? I said, if you can house and feed us, we'll come over and do the project for free. So that's part of the beginning part of that story. And the mission has gone longer and stronger, and we're building a camp for kids up in the Kokea Forest for more activities to do, more discipleship training. The church is leading that. No matter which group goes, it's like they're pouring into them. That's the prerequisite. It's cheap to go there because there are other camps in Hawaii, but they're very expensive. But it's cheap to go there because the real goal is to, you know, present the gospel to them and give them a chance to accept Jesus as their Savior. Fast forward to that, what do we do with them afterwards? The whole part of my story was that nobody was there to disciple me. So we most recently built a Bible college called Anchor House, and it's a one-year gap Bible college now, hoping to get it to a four-year Bible college. But right now is the second year, and, you know, we went from 67 students the first year to 147 students this year. So God's continuing to pour out his grace and give us, you know, mercy in doing those things in Hawaii.
Wow. That's awesome that God just placed those things in your life to serve him and continue his work. And you're just being the hands and feet of Jesus. What does it look like when we come back to our home? And here in Topeka specifically, what are some mission opportunities that are in dire need of those that are willing to serve?
So there's a couple opportunities that are near to us. And I mean, honestly, Joe's preached about this before. Who's our neighbor? So, I mean, we are the representatives of Christ in flesh. So there's all those opportunities right in your own neighborhood, and you'll know different people that are struggling or maybe need something that can't afford. So I don't like to talk about ourselves too much, but one of the things of our business is that we're able to do those things, you know, to keep my crew busy, to be make sure they're still employed and have different things. We're able to go out and do things in the community. So it's pretty simple. I mean, like a lot of times this time of year, the leaves are falling and we can go out and take leaves out of gutters for widows and single moms, or you can be an auto mechanic, do different things that can help people out. But I mentioned this before, was one of the opportunities we have is working with Topeka North Outreach, just to simply make sure people are fed and then to love on them and take care of things. And also through that, and also through Lifeline Children's Services, that we do have a local office here in Topeka, and there's opportunities to pour into single moms and babies and, you know, even fathers. I mean, we need disciples of fathers that are in those crisis pregnancy type situations, or, you know, just need a hand up. And through that, we can get, you know, they may need washing machines, they may need a bed, different things like that. And it's just an opportunity to be Christ, you know. It's available. It's not hard. It's a step in faith, and God is way more than, you know, pouring back into you when you do those things.
Thank you for sharing those. I had a missionary when I was in Amsterdam sharing the gospel. He said to our group, if we're obedient locally, we can impact globally. With being obedient locally, like yourself and others here in the community, when we want to take the next step and the Lord's guiding us to that and only leaning on Him, how can you take that next step to go international?
So the leap is more an act of faith than a lot of things we do. I mean, it's easier to accept Christ in my situation where you're going to spend eternity. Sometimes we don't think we're equipped, but we don't have to be equipped because God's the equipper. He's faithful to give us everything that we need in those situations. I mean, I'd say dive in, jump into, you know, those opportunities around here. We have ShareFest every year in Topeka. You can go alongside. I know Harvesters is getting ready to move to Lawrence now, but you can go and pack, you know, food for, you know, different people like that. Simple as maybe going across the street and taking your leaves out of your neighbor's gutters. It's more aged. And as I've aged, I mean, my neighbors have aged as well. So there's widows and orphans. I mean, my biggest thing in life is that there's very few mandates in the Bible, but I try to apply James 1:27, where this is true and undefiled religion to take care of widows and orphans. So that's my heart. Doesn't necessarily mean it has to be your heart, but that's one of those things that really pleases God. And it's just so easy to do. You can do it without thinking. There's a need everywhere, and people don't ask. So when you ask people genuinely how they're doing, make sure you genuinely want to know how they're doing, or just keep your eyes open to things. And, you know, it's a whole different world. I had this opportunity in India. We were doing an orphan conference, and we did a thing to 167 pastors, and nobody signed up for the orphan conference. And they told me, it's very easy for you to come here and judge us about orphan crisis, but we don't have one. And I said, Abraham, I'm sorry that's the way that we came across. But I said, the big thing in this is that I have orphans within 1 mile of my house. And I said, I'm ashamed to tell you that I have a home for my cars that we could probably fit 100 of the orphans here in India in. But within 1 mile of my house, I have an orphan crisis because single moms live in Section 8 housing. and they're trying to hold down jobs and they're trying to do the best they can for their families. So coming alongside those families and giving them the respite care that you can do through Lifeline Children's Services, you know, you can be that temporary family if the mom just needs a break or if she needs to go to school to study more so she can get her GED or she can even, you know, become an LPN or a nurse or something like that. There's so many opportunities that you are going to get paid back so much more in the joy of the Lord than the effort that you put into it.
Thank you for sharing that wisdom and recentering the focus back on the Lord's goodness and the faithfulness he has for us and the path that he has and right where we're at and not where we try to lean into our own understanding. As we wrap up, is there any parting thoughts that you have for us and our listeners?
So if I had one parting thought is like, we don't have to think that we're going to accomplish anything. It's because it's the Lord that does the accomplishing. As I reflect on the things in my life that have happened through this whole process, it's like he chose me. I didn't choose him. He gives us all opportunities. And for me, it's been a tremendous joy. I can't imagine that a 50-yard line ticket at a Super Bowl could be, it has to be pale in comparison to the joy that of all the witnessing and all the families and things that I had in my life. And we grew up in America. We tend to focus on me, us, whatever. You know, we were designed and created to glorify God. And I can tell you there's no more better glory in your own life than being a champion to walk alongside God and see him do what he does. And you're front row eyewitness.
Thank you so much, Rick. And as we continue to go out and seek the Lord daily, I just thank you for listening and thank you for Rick for being on and sharing us about the missions locally here in Topeka as well as internationally. Thank you all, and we'll see you next time on the Wake Podcast.